Good evening. This is Life Rattle, your story show, and I'm your host, Virginia Ashbery. Tonight, Life Rattle number 1331, your monthly classic show, the 2015 Valentine edition, brings you two stories of unrequited love by longtime contributor Adam Giles. Tonight's writer, Adam Giles, has been a frequent contributor to Life Rattle since he first appeared on the program in June of 2001. In 2006, he took on the role of occasional producer when this show was aired on Ryerson's radio station, CKLN. Giles was born the older of two boys in 1978 in Mississauga, where he grew up. He completed 5 years of study at the University of Toronto at Mississauga, where he served as editor-in-chief for the campus newspaper. He went on to earn a postgraduate diploma in journalism and new media. Giles has written for the web, for several print publications, for CTV Newsnet, and he read one of the stories you will hear tonight titled Christine on CBC Radio 1. Tonight, Giles brings us a couple of anti-Valentine themed stories, what one of our founders, Arnie Ackman, called a mini heartbreak series. So let's listen now as Adam Giles reads his first story, Christine, here on Life Rattle. And you're listening to Life Rattle from Toronto, Ontario, Canada. And remember, Life Rattle stories often contain language and situations that some listeners may find offensive. So listener discretion is advised.
Christine by Adam Giles. Sunday, November 23rd, 1997. The clock in the hardware department shows 2:30 p.m., lunchtime. I walk quickly to the Home Depot lunchroom. My hands fumble behind my back to untie my grimy orange apron. I pull my apron over my head and run up the lunchroom stairs, taking three at a time. I reach the top of the stairs, rip open my Velcro-fastened back support, and at 2:34 p.m., punch 7003-00093, my employee number, into the time clock. I rush to my locker and ball up my apron and back support. I unlock my locker, open it, and toss in my orange and black handful. The two orange apron strings dangle down from my locker as I slam the gray metal door. Like most days, I didn't bring a lunch to work. Like most days, McDonald's, Burger King, and Harvey's are my three options for lunch. But today, filling my stomach isn't my first priority. I will only pick something up if I have time after my important chore. I brought a card with me from home, so I only have to worry about picking up some flowers. I have 1 hour to find a florist and decide what flowers to buy. I hurry back towards the lunchroom stairs when a familiar voice calls my name. Adam, my friend Joanne yells. As usual, her holler earns more than just my attention. Almost everyone in the lunchroom stops what they're doing, turns, and looks at her. Where are you going in such a hurry? Weren't you going to say hi? I walk over and look at an empty chair beside Joanne. I look back at Joanne. I'm doing it today. Doing what? I'm telling her. Oh my God. I look around and see at least 10 heads looking back at us. Shh, I say. What are you going to do? I don't know yet. I'm going to get some flowers right now, and I'll go see her after work. Wow, I can't believe you're finally doing it, Joanne smiles. Yeah, me neither. But I can't take it anymore. Seize the day, right? Joanne smiles. Yeah. What's the worst thing that could happen? As I face Joanne, two hands slap my shoulders and shake me. I turn around. My friend and Joanne's boyfriend, Scott, stands behind me, smiling a goofy smile. "Sees what?" he asks. "He's going to tell a girl that he likes her," Joanne smirks. I look around the room. No one's looking this time. "Oh yeah?" Scott nods. "Is it the one you were telling me about a while ago?" "Yeah, she's home for the weekend." "Where does she go to school again?" he asks. "Sanford, Fleming, and Lindsay." "Cool. Make sure you do it right." Scott nods and glances at Joanne. "What are you going to do?" "I'm going to get some flowers and stuff. Any suggestions of what kind I should get?" "Roses, man. You can't go wrong with roses." "Roses. Okay. All right, I've got to get going. Oh, do you know of any florists around here?" "Yeah, there's that greenhouse place right down Winston Churchill," Scott says. I nod and smile. "Okay, I'll see you guys after lunch." I turn around, run to my car, and speed through pouring rain to the greenhouse nursery on Winston Churchill Boulevard. The downpour of rain bounces off the vacant greenhouse parking lot. I walk through the sliding glass doors and past the cashier. "Hello," she says. "Hi." I look around the nursery. Roses. Roses. I look around the nursery. Nothing but tall plants, short plants, and fancy multicolored flowers. I turn to the cashier. "Excuse me, do you sell roses?" She tilts her head, smiles, and points to a big refrigerator against the wall. "Of course, they're right over there." I turn around and look back at her. "Oh, thanks." I walk over to the fridge and look in. White roses, yellow roses, pink roses, and red roses. I open the fridge door and look at my choices. White, yellow, pink, or red. I bite my lower lip. I turn around and look at the cashier. She mouths, "Red." I smile and turn back around. I pick 3 red roses out of a water-filled jar, careful not to touch any of the thorns, and walk them back to the checkout counter. Small water droplets slide from the blood-red petals down the dark green stems. "Red's a good color," I smile. The cashier smiles and nods. She adds some other skimpy-looking decorative plants and wraps them in a shiny purple paper. I pay for the roses, thank the cashier, and hurry back to my car. I place the roses gently in the back seat and race to the Burger King drive-thru. I order a king-size Whopper combo and drive back to the Home Depot. I lean back and grab the card I brought from home. I glance at the roses on the back seat. I step out of the car and run back to the lunchroom, clutching my bag of food, my large Coke, and the card. I walk past the lunchroom punch clock and see that I still have 20 minutes to eat my lunch and write something in the card. Joanne and Scott have already left. I pull out a chair, eat my Whopper and fries, drink my Coke, and write in the card. I write, "Hey, Christine, I hope you don't get too scared by me telling you this, but I hope you can understand that I needed to tell you. No words can describe what I want to say better than I love you. So if you don't feel the same way, don't worry. I just needed to get this off my chest, and I wanted you to know. So please understand that I do feel this way, and no matter what happens, I want to stay friends. Thanks, Christine. Love, Adam." I close and hold the card. I think about ripping it in half and throwing it in the garbage pail beside me. I think about how good I felt when Christine signed my grade 12 yearbook. I think about the first time I spoke to her, in the limousine, along with some other friends, on the way home from our high school formal in June 1996. I think about the time we went to Canada's Wonderland together, in the summer of 1997, with Matt, Elke, and Jeff. I think about the picture I had of her. I think about the picture I had of her and me next to each other, on my friend Richard's couch. I think about every email she sent me since the beginning of September that she signed, "Love, Christine." I shake my head, slide the card into the red envelope, lick the seal, and press the envelope closed. I wrap my back support around my waist, throw my Burger King garbage into the pail, throw the envelope in my locker, and throw my apron over my head, and go stand in front of the punch clock, waiting for it to change from 3:33 to 3:34 p.m. I work for another 3.5 hours. I help customers in the hardware department and try not to think about what I will say when I get to Christine's door. If I think too much, I'll talk myself out of it. A few minutes before 7 o'clock, after a quick sweep of the dirty, dusty floor, I throw the broom against the cash register in the hardware department and run towards the lunchroom. Joanne stands in front of the punch clock as I speed to my locker. I hold up and wave the card. I wrote everything I want to say in here, so if I chicken out, I can just tell her to read this. Joanne smiles. Good idea. What are you doing tonight? I ask. Nothing. Nothing? That sounds exciting. Joanne rolls her eyes. She smiles, and the clock turns from 6:59 to 7 o'clock p.m. Joanne punches out and moves aside. I punch in 7003-00093. I run down the lunchroom stairs, stop for a sip of water from the fountain, and walk slowly towards the exit doors. I pass and exchange goodbyes with Rick, Shannon, Rose, Jeff, and Jerry. I walk through the exit doors and across the parking lot to my car. I drive 40 kilometers an hour along Winston Churchill. The speed limit is 60. I drive down Burnhamthorpe instead of taking Highway 403. I think about the time Christine thanked me for giving her advice. She thought her friendship with Shannon drifted, so I told her to tell Shannon. I think about all the times that we hung out at Webb's restaurant with our friends Matt, Richard, Todd, and Jeff in the summer of 1997, especially the time Christine whispered to Jeff that she wanted to switch seats with him so she could sit next to me. I think about the time I ran into her at LensCrafters at Aramills Town Center, and I met her mother, and her mother thought I was nice, and from then on her mother always asked if I was going whenever Christine went out. I turn onto Christine Street and drive slowly. I see her white car in the driveway. I park my car on the road. I pick up the card and the flowers from the back seat. I hold them both and stare at my steering wheel. I place the flowers gently on the passenger seat. I open my door and step out of my car. I walk slowly to her door. I stand there. I take a deep breath. I ring the bell. I wait. Her brother answers the door. He looks surprised to see me. Hey, is Christine home? Yeah, just a minute. He turns around. Christine! I look back at my car. My knees weaken and my hands shake. Christine walks up to the door wearing a white t-shirt and plaid pajama pants. She bends her eyebrow and curls her top lip. Hey, she says. Hey, can I talk to you? Christine looks side to side and back at me. I guess. What are you doing here? Can you come outside? What's going on? We have company over right now. I can't talk too long. Her eyebrow curls down again and her lips part. She steps onto the porch and closes the door. Okay. Please don't be shocked. But I came here to give you this, I say. I hand her the card. I pause. I look at the ground. And to tell you that I love you. I can't lift my heavy head. I stare at the porch's gray concrete. I force my head up and look at her face. I'd never seen that much of the whites of her eyes before. Her eyebrows flicker up and down, and her mouth remains open. I look at her mouth and wait for words to come out. I wait and wait and wait. Silence. Silence forever. Okay, she mutters. When did this happen? It's been there for a while, but I never had the guts to tell you before. So you just show up here, unannounced, and throw this on me while we have company? I'm sorry, but I just had to tell you now. I couldn't take it anymore. I know you're going back up to Lindsay tomorrow, and I had to tell you face to face. Christine fires a blank stare at me. I swallow some saliva. I brought something for you. It's in my car. I don't know, Adam, she says. I should be getting back in now. Please, I say. Just come over here. I lead her to my car. I open the passenger door. I pick the roses off the seat and turn around. I hand Christine the roses. Here. Her eyes open wide, squint, and then open again. She holds out the card and the roses. No, I can't take these. Yes, you can, I say quietly. Please, just take them. No, she whines. I've got company inside. They can't be seeing me walk in with flowers. So just hide them. No, here. She holds out the card and the roses. At least take the card. You can hide that easily. Okay, she snaps. She slaps the roses into my hand. I hope you understand that I needed to tell you, and I wanted to stay I hope you understand that I needed to tell you, and I want to stay friends no matter what, Christine. She nods. Okay, I'll send you an email or something when I get back to Lindsay. I nod. Christine runs back into her house, and I walk around to the driver's side of my car. I open the door, fling the roses onto the passenger seat, sit down, and slam the door. I speed away. Tears blur my sight. I turn onto Credit Valley Road, past the Petro-Canada gas station. I turn onto the Chase, and as I turn, I grab the roses off the passenger seat and throw them out the window. I'm almost home when I shake my head and turn around at Sandown Road. I drive back to Petro-Canada to buy cigarettes. I don't know which ones to ask for, since I've never bought a pack before. I always just took some from my dad's open packs around the house when I felt like smoking. I ask the guy behind the counter for the Dumouriez in the gray package, my dad's brand. The guy turns around and looks back at me. The Special Milds? Yeah, I think so, I say, looking at the ground. Can I see some ID? I look up at him and squint. I fumble through my wallet and show him my driver's license. King size? He asks. Yeah. 473, please. I hand him a $5 bill, and he hands me some coins. I grab my pack of cigarettes and walk back to the car. I drive to the Aramills Town Center. I turn into the parking lot and look over a sea of open asphalt. Not one car in the parking lot. I pull into a spot and jam the gear selector into park. I turn the key backwards so my car's off, but I can still listen to music. I listen to Push by Matchbox 20. I want to push you around. Well, I will. Well, I will. I want to push you down. Well, I will. Well, I will. I want to take you for granted. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I rip the plastic wrapper off the pack of cigarettes, open the pack, and rip out the gray foil paper that covers the cigarettes. I pull out a cigarette, pop it in my mouth, and then fumble in the glove compartment for an old lighter. I light up, wipe the back of my sleeve across my eyes, and look across the empty parking lot. Dim orange lights shine down on grids of darkened yellow lines painted over the black asphalt. I breathe in some smoke and blow it out the window. I pool the saliva in my mouth, bend my tongue, and spit out the window. I look over city lights, cars driving along Air Mills Parkway, and the empty parking lot. I smoke.
That was Adam Giles reading his story, Christine. Giles' next story is titled Leslie.
Leslie by Adam Giles. On a Saturday night in November 1999, I balance my bag of Burger King food and king-size Coke and slide my keycard into the slot and open the door of the Medium, the student newspaper of the University of Toronto at Mississauga. I step into the office, flick on the lights, and walk to my desk. I place my food and drink on my desk. I peel my thin spring jacket off my back and toss it on the desk beside mine. I jerk the mouse of my computer to make the screensaver disappear. Sit down in my chair and open my Burger King bag. Cold air wafts in from the big vent in the ceiling and flutters pages of newspapers stacked on the light table. A glass surface covers six fluorescent lights on the 3-foot-high white wooden light table. We use the light table on the weekends when we paste our page layouts onto Bristol board flats. The clock in the bottom right corner of my screen reads 10:34 p.m. I pour 5 packages of salt onto my king-size fries and eat some. I unwrap one of my Whoppers and bite into it. I swallow my food and suck Coke through the straw in my cup. As I chew and swallow, I move the mouse over to the Quark Express icon and double-click. I use Quark to lay out my sports pages. I finish my food, crumple my garbage, and toss it towards the garbage can. The bag bounces off the rim of the garbage can and falls to the floor. I turn back to my computer and create text boxes and photo boxes in Quark. I import text into the text boxes and photos into the photo boxes. I move the boxes around on the page of my screen. I enlarge some boxes. I shrink other boxes. I rest my elbow on my desk and rest my chin in my hand. With my face a foot away from the monitor, I stare at the screen. I lay out my pages. At about 1 o'clock a.m., my friend Jen, the Medium's features editor, walks through the door. Hey. Hey, Jen. How's it going? I stand up and walk slowly towards her. Eh, she grunts. Eh? Is something wrong? We hug. Yeah, my life is shitty, she says. Again? What happened? I hate my job and my boyfriend is being a dork. Ah, I hate my life. Tell me something about you. What's new? Any new girls in your life? No, it's a pretty bad scene. I smile. Jen and I walk over to the L-shaped couch and lay down so that our heads rest next to each other. Why? I pick crust out of the corner of my eye and look at Jen. Well, you know that my longest relationship has been 4 months, and I've never really gone out with anyone that I was really crazy about. Even when I am crazy about a girl, I just scare them off. Have I told you about Leslie before? Was that the one who told you to get lost when you brought her roses and told her that you loved her? I smile. No, that was Christine. Leslie was a different disaster. Jen smiles. Oh. Okay, what happened? I shake my head and look at Jen. Okay. Well, I started working at Home Depot in August 1996, when I was 18. And sometime in early 97, a new bunch of people finished orientation and started working. One of them was a girl that looked really familiar. She had shoulder-length brown curly hair. That was the first thing I noticed about her. She was a cashier and I worked on lot. One of the things I had to do on lot was help customers carry heavy shit out to their cars when the cashiers called for one of us. That's a pretty shitty job, Jen says. I turn my head and face Jen. Oh yeah. The worst was customers who needed help carrying out those huge 24 by 24 concrete patio stones. Jen smiles. I turn my head back and look at the ceiling. Anyway, I didn't pay much attention to this familiar-looking cashier at first. But then one day at school, this was still back in high school. Where did you go to high school? John Fraser. It's behind Aramos Town Center. Jen nods. Yeah, so I saw her in the John Fraser Library. And it was one of those weird moments where two people look at each other and don't know what to say. I was walking out of the library, and when I walked past her, she said, "You work at Home Depot, right?" I said, "Yeah," and I told her she looked familiar when I first saw her there. So after that, we started talking to each other at work. I responded to her pages to do carryouts for customers, and I begged for her sometimes. I found out her boyfriend was a guy that me and my friend Matt hung out with at pub in first year. We started going on breaks when we had the same shifts. Then in, like, November, after I just turned 19 in August, a new bunch of employees started working, and I became friends with two of them, Ann and Garcia. They were both cashiers. After they started working, they organized a lot of get-togethers between cashiers and other employees. We went to bars for people's birthdays and for front-end parties. We went to clubs downtown, we went bowling, and we played pool. At first, Leslie wouldn't come out with us much because she was 18 and she couldn't get into bars and stuff. But after she turned 19, she came out with us a lot more. Over the next little while, I became close friends with Garcia, and one day she asked me if I could keep a secret. I said yeah, and she told me that she trusted me and that she was gay. Whoa, that's really cool. Jen lifts her head, adjusts her pillow, and rests her head back down. Yeah, I was shocked. No one's ever told me they were gay before. But anyway, that's how close we were. We could talk about anything. So when I started liking Leslie, Garcia was one of only two people I told. Obviously, Richie was the first to know. Obviously, Jen says. You two share the same brain. I didn't think she was attractive when I first saw her. But after I got to know her more and more, she became the most attractive girl in Depot. One day in March 98, we went to McDonald's together for lunch and brought our food back to the lunchroom. We talked while we ate, and at the end of our lunch hour, we traded email addresses. We started emailing back and forth for a while, to the point where I checked my email 20 times a day just to see if she sent anything. I got to know her little by little, and I liked everything about her. I don't really know how to describe her. She was kind of quiet and innocent looking, but she was also talkative and really confident. She had a great sense of humor, and she never swore. I got that good nervous feeling whenever I was around her, because I got to like her so much that I was afraid to do or say anything to scare her off. That's what I did to Christine. I was obsessed with the whole idea of carpe diem, seize the day, that I convinced myself I had no other choice but to tell Christine how I felt. But that ended up backfiring pretty badly. So this time, I always had that in the back of my mind. I consciously based all my actions on trying not to scare Leslie off. I wouldn't email her too often. I wouldn't talk to her every time I saw her at work. And when we eventually traded phone numbers, I didn't call her right away because I didn't want to look over anxious. Then on March 26th, right before I stepped out of the house to go play baseball, she sent me an email, and in the third line she said, "So, are you never going to call me? Maybe I'm just too much of a loser to have you call me." "Whoa, you remember the exact day?" Jen asks. "What's wrong with you?" I smile. "Yep, March 26, 1998. I only remember it because it was honestly one of my happiest moments ever. I probably smiled the happiest smile I ever smiled. I couldn't believe she was actually interested in hearing from me. I wanted to pick up the phone right there and call her, but I didn't because I was already late for baseball, and I didn't want our first phone conversation to be rushed. I replied to her message and told her she wasn't too much of a loser to have me call her, and that I'd call her the next day because I was just on my way out. I think that was the most fun I'd ever had playing baseball. I thought about Leslie the whole time. "Aw, that's so sweet," Jen giggles. "Yeah, I know," I spit out. So then I called her the next day like I said I would, and it was so good. We talked about work, school, our dogs, and our families. We started calling each other more often, and we gradually stopped emailing. We kept going to Home Depot parties and get-togethers. One time, we all went to the Fox and Fiddle for someone's birthday party. Leslie was the life of the party that night. She flirted and sang with the live band that was there, and she led us all out to the dance floor a bunch of times. Then when the band went off at the end of the night and a DJ started playing slow songs, I asked Leslie if she wanted to dance. She said yes, and we danced for two or three songs. "Jen, you don't understand. I loved her so much in those few minutes. They seemed like forever. I can still remember the smell of shampoo in her hair. It was the best smell ever. The whole thing seemed like it was in slow motion, and I swear to God I could have died right there holding her." "Ah," Jen sighs. "That's so cute." There's more. That night, Leslie was going to walk home, but I offered her a ride, and she agreed. So I dropped her off, and the next day at work, she said she really appreciated the ride and that she owed me one. But one party the cashiers had really got me thinking about the possibility of me and Leslie getting together. We went to some bowling alley. I got a ride there with my friend Vanessa, who also drove Garcia and Anne. We got there, and I bowled with Leslie, Vanessa, Garcia, and Anne. After that, we went to McDonald's to get something to eat. But as we got to the bowling alley parking lot, and Leslie saw that I'd probably get in Vanessa's car again, she said, "Who's going to come with me?" Of course I said I would, and I got in the passenger seat of Leslie's blue Geo Metro. We all had a good time at McDonald's, and when we left, Leslie asked me if I wanted a ride home. I said yes, and she drove me home. When we got to my house, I reached over, gave her a hug, and thanked her for the ride. "Okay, this doesn't sound like a disaster," Jen groans. "Don't worry, the good part's coming," I say. So now every time I talk to Richie, Leslie always came up in the conversation somehow. Richie knew her from high school, too. So one day when I was talking to Richie about her, he He mentioned that he was going to see Lost in Space at the Ontario Place Cinesphere with a group of friends, and that I should invite Leslie. So I invited her the next time I spoke to her on the phone, and she said she'd love to come, and that she was looking forward to seeing Richie, who she hadn't seen in a while. "Wait a second." Jen rolls out of her sprawled out position on the couch and sits up. "I was there that night. I saw Lost in Space with you guys." "What?" "Yeah, I was there." "That was the girl you were sitting next to?" "You were there?" I squint and look at Jen, still lying down on the couch. "I don't remember you there that night." "Thanks," Jen laughs. "Yeah, I was there with Andrew." "Really? Sorry, I don't remember that. I must have blocked that night from my memory." "But yeah, so you saw her then?" "Yeah, she was cute," Jen says. Yes, she was." "Yeah, so I guess you remember how bad that movie was." Jen nods. She flings her legs back up on the couch and lays back down. "Yeah, it was pretty brutal." "Yeah, all through the movie I tried to talk to Leslie, because I hated it, and I could tell by the way she was sitting that she hated it. And I didn't want us to just sit there and watch this horrible movie. So when it was over, I apologized for dragging her to see such a bad movie. And then we went to Marché's for dessert." "Oh yeah, you were there. You and Andrew came to Marché's with me, Leslie, and Richie." Jen nods. I laugh. "Sorry. So yeah, after I drove Leslie home that night, I apologized again, and she said it was okay, and that she had a good time. But I could tell she was just trying to be nice. As I drove home from Leslie's house, I felt so stupid for bringing her to see such a bad movie. It was all I could think about. I kept shaking my head and saying I fucked up. I was so mad at myself for letting this happen, and then I talked myself into believing that I had to tell her how I felt. I had to throw away my conscious protest against the seize the day mentality that didn't work for me with Christine. On April 10th, I went to see City of Angels with Richie and my ex-girlfriend, Kathy. Have you ever seen that movie?" "No, was it good?" "Yeah. Maybe it was just the state of mind I was in, but I loved that movie. It was kind of sappy, and it was one of the few movies that made me cry. I thought about Leslie, though, the whole time. I thought about Leslie through the whole love story. Incidentally, this was also then the same night I fell in love with Meg Ryan." Jen laughs and shakes her head. I smile. "But yeah, after I walked out of that theater, I convinced myself I had to take Leslie to see it. I thought, seize the day. Fuck it. So the next time I saw Leslie at work, I'd ask her if she'd seen City of Angels. She said no, so I told her it was an amazing movie and asked her to see it with me. She said okay, and we decided to see it on a Friday in late April. So, like I did with Christine, I planned out how I wanted to tell her what was on my mind. I felt nervous and confident at the same time. I decided I was going to see the movie with her, and then, if it was nice outside, ask her if she wanted to go for a walk afterwards. So, on a Friday night in late April 98, I picked Leslie up at her house and drove to Silver City, near the 403. I'd already bought the tickets that afternoon on my lunch break, so we walked right into the theater about 10 minutes before the movie. We watched the movie, and I wondered if she was thinking about me the way I was thinking about her when I first saw the movie. And I was nervous the whole time, too, thinking about what I wanted to tell her afterwards. I was so nervous that I hardly paid attention to the movie. After it was over, I asked her if she liked it, and she said, "Adam, why'd you take me to see such a sad movie?" With a little smile as she wiped a small tear from her eye. She said, "Yeah, it was good." So we walked out of the movie theater, and as we walked back to my car, I worked up the guts to blurt out, It's nice outside. Do you want to go for a walk or something? She looked at me, hesitated, and said, okay. So we walked across the parking lot and behind Silver City. I shoved my hands in my jeans pocket and felt my heart rate speed up. I forget what we talked about because it was pretty meaningless and very awkward. I could only think about what I wanted to say. I couldn't actually say it. I wanted to tell her I really liked her. After Christine, I wasn't going to use the phrase, I love you, again. But nothing came out. I wanted to tell her that I really liked her since the time I danced with her at the Fox and the Fiddle, and I smelled the shampoo in her hair. I wanted to tell her that she made my day so many times, especially when she said, so, are you never going to call me? In her email. And when she said, so who's going to come with me? In the bowling alley parking lot. That experience with Christine really fucked up my confidence. And now I couldn't say a damn thing. In my head, I was kicking myself for not being able to say anything. It was the longest, most excruciating torture ever. While we walked around Silver City, I knew I was fucking up. This was my second fuck-up with Leslie, the first being lost in space. The whole seize the day thing went right out the window, and I just wanted to go home. We did a lap around the Silver City building and walked back to my car. We got in and I drove her home as we talked about some other meaningless, trivial things. I dropped her off at home, and as I drove home, I punched the steering wheel and shook my head. I turn and look at Jen. I nod. Jen looks at me. It didn't end like that, though. What happened when you saw her at work? Well, I didn't see Leslie or Garcia for a week, at work for the next week or so. A week after the City of Angels disaster, I saw Garcia in the lunchroom, and I was about to tell her what happened. But before I even said anything, she looked at me and said, "What did you do?" in a scolding voice. I didn't say anything because I didn't know what she knew. Word gets around in the depot. Then Garcia said, "I heard Leslie wants nothing to do with you anymore." My heart sank. I asked her what the hell she was talking about. Garcia said Leslie's friend Jeff, who worked on lot with me, said that Leslie said she didn't want anything to do with me anymore. I bugged Garcia about this for hours that day, but she insisted that she didn't know anything more than that. I couldn't believe it. So the next time I saw Leslie, which wasn't for another week or so after I talked to Garcia, I didn't approach her to talk to her. I gave her a hello head nod. I hadn't spoken to her for 2 weeks, but I wanted to see if what Garcia said was true. So I was going to wait and see if Leslie was going to talk to me. She didn't. That night I went home and cried. Jen rolls her legs off the couch. She sits up and looks at me. I said hi and bye to her the next few times I saw her. But everything about the way she acted made me believe what Garcia said was true. From the night of City of Angels on, I never had any kind of meaningful conversation with Leslie again. I spoke to her in passing at work and hoped she would say something to make me believe there was still a chance for us. I waited and waited, but she never called me or emailed me again. I went into a bit of a depression for the following few weeks. I took up smoking, and I shaved and dyed my hair bright blonde, which now that I think about it, were probably attempts to get her attention. Actually, here's some irony for you. It was Christine who dyed my hair. Jen smiles. One day, Leslie asked me, "What did you do to your hair?" But by then I was too fucked up to see that comment as any kind of glimmer of hope. This was my third and last fuck-up with Leslie. First I took her to Lost in Space, then I couldn't say anything after City of Angels, and now I completely believed what Garcia had told me, without ever once asking Leslie about it. Now how is that for the king of all fuck-ups? Yeah, that's up there, Jen nods. Everything comes in threes, right? I smile. Jen nods. So there. I roll my legs off the couch, sit up, and stand up. Jen stands up and hugs me. It's okay. I love you, honey, she says. I laugh and pat Jen's back. I'm glad we can talk about stuff like this, Jen says. Me too. I stretch and yawn. What time is it? Jen looks at her watch. Fuck, it's 1:30. I gotta get some work done. Yeah, me too. I walk to my desk, and Jen walks to her desk. I sit down in my chair, jiggle the mouse around on the mouse pad to make the screensaver disappear, and look at the layout that I took a break from half an hour ago. I move the text and photo boxes up and down, and side to side, and make some bigger and some smaller. Jen sits down at her desk. She picks up the phone. She calls her boyfriend.
That was Adam Giles reading his story, Leslie. And that concludes Life Rattle number 1331. My name is Virginia Ashbury. Arnie Ackman recorded Adam Giles reading his stories. And Life Rattle was created by Arnie Ackman and Guy Allen.